Welcome back to another episode of the Stephen Reed Podcast. Today we have singer-songwriter Tom Allison speaking to us about his brand new album. Hope you enjoy. Thank you so much for coming. I appreciate you're a really busy guy.
That's fine.
And you've got a lot on at the moment. It's a busy time of year for you. Tell me what you've got on. Let's find out what you've been up to recently.
Okay, so the time of recording, which is a little bit before of when it's coming out. So the single was released this week, so the 15th of March. The first single is called Sour from the album. And the second single is coming out in April 15th. It's another Friday. We've timed that quite well. We like Fridays on our release days.
Okay. And that's when I think a lot of music goes up on Spotify anyway.
Yeah, Fridays work really well. It's just when everyone's already on the computers, traffic is really good at certain times, so you just sort of release things. I'm not sure the actual days. Like, there's good days and bad days. Like, bad days are like midweek or like a Tuesday. Mm. That's the bad day. But like Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays are always good. Wednesdays are quite good. Middle of the week. And then May 3rd is when the album comes out. Chapter 1 is what the album is called.
Okay.
And that comes out May 3rd.
So that's a project. How long have you been working on that for?
So I started probably recording Chapter 1 the end of November. I think I actually started recording it on my birthday, which is at the end of November. And then probably finished main recording middle of January. So there's not a massive timescale, and I didn't want to have a massive timescale. Mm. Because in the past I've had problems with putting stuff off and continually putting release dates back, and so I wanted to, you know, get it out as quick as possible. So I finished recording, finished mixing it, sent it off to Will, who's
also producing this podcast.
Yeah, he mastered the album for me. He's done a great job. Sounds great so far. It just really, really rounded everything together. Really brought the vision of what I was looking for together. And then I decided that I wanted it to be released. The original was going to be March 15th. It was originally when the first single was going to go up. And then a couple of people told me maybe I should lengthen that release date a little bit, have one single, and then it was a little bit more attention started to become...
Start to build excitement in the process of recording, releasing and uploading it.
Yeah, so it went from having one single to having two singles. And originally it was going to be in the space of a month that we were going to have two singles released. And then I think I made the decision that I didn't want to rush. If I was going to do this properly and have two singles, I didn't want to rush doing one. I also wanted time to do two really good videos for both singles.
Okay.
Which I've got. I mean, the video for Sour is really professional. It's done by our good friend Jordan McInnes. He directed it, and Justin Botha as well. He did the cameras, was great on it.
Brilliant. And when do they come out in respect to the album and the singles then? Are they alongside or in future?
The videos come out in the same, you know, they came out on the same day as the singles. So,
okay.
Sours went up 5 o'clock on the Friday of March 15th. And then the second single, If He Treats You Wrong, that video, which is more of a like behind the scenes recording and like some live stuff as well, that went up on, you know, a very similar sort of time frame.
Okay.
Because I've got no control over when Spotify, iTunes, Amazon release the stuff onto their marketplace, it either happens at midnight or it happens at another point during the day. I don't get told by the distributor, so they just send everything off to them, and it either comes out at midnight or it comes out at some point during that release day.
Sure.
So I couldn't control when, you know, to time it exactly the same. So I just decided 5 o'clock on a Friday. Most people are in, normally looking at their phone around that time. So it just sort of worked.
Okay. So just to give the listeners some context then, because we're recording this around mid-March it is now, and your album's coming out beginning of May.
That's right, yeah.
So this podcast episode is going to be released on the Wednesday, and your album's going to be out Friday at some point. And by this time as well, the singles are already out there, I take it, for people to go and listen to and watch on.
Yeah, the singles will be out on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube's new streaming service is going to be on there as well.
Wicked.
Just waiting to see, you know, what sort of reaction it gets. Obviously, at the time of recording this, like, nothing's gone up yet.
No.
But I'm pretty confident about the reaction it's going to get, just through what people are, you know, saying when I put stuff up and putting the promos up for the video. Everything's going really well.
Sure. So let's go backwards a little bit and fill in a couple of gaps, and I want to get some context for myself as well, because it's been a while since I've seen you, and I'm aware that your musical direction's changed a bit since I last saw you. So introduce yourself a little bit more and tell us what kind of music you're doing and what your project's all about.
Okay, so Chapter One is primarily a country Americana record. The reason that I went down that road was I was listening to an awful lot of country music when I was at university. A couple of people introduced me to certain acts, Dierks Bentley, Ryan Adams, people like that. They're stretching between that country and Americana sort of bracket. And there is a big difference between country and Americana. Like, country is mostly just a genre to itself. Americana brings in other genres. Like, there's a lot of folk influences. There's a lot of, you know, rock influences, quite hard rock influences at times, like southern rock influences. But the two things that combine really well between country and Americana is the musicianship, the guitar work on, you know, both kinds of music. There's a real emphasis on that, and there's a real emphasis on lyrical content as well.
Okay.
Which is something that I'm interested in. As a songwriter, I think all songwriters should be interested in having good lyrics and putting across a story and mixing that with really good musicianship.
Sure. So with this project then, is this something that you've collaborated with other musicians on, or is this a solo project that you've done purely by yourself?
I'm just trying to think. Pretty much, no, it's 100% pretty much all my own stuff. Obviously, people have heard stuff in the past and gone, oh, maybe change that, but I might not necessarily have taken that advice. I might have changed the odd lyric here and there, but it's 100%, apart from obviously mastering, which I didn't do, but all the mixing, all the producing, all the songwriting, all the guitar playing, everything is me on this album. So
brilliant.
Even like the backing vocals, like, which was tough to do because you have to try and make yourself sound a bit different to do your own backing vocals. But everything was done by me. Hopefully the next album will be a bit more collaborative. But
okay.
I didn't want to go down a route of me doing it on my own. But it became a sense of, I need to do this now, otherwise I'm never going to do it. And it became quite time sensitive. And instead of getting people in, recording the odd bits here and there, I just thought, I've got the musicianship to do this. I'll do this one. And then, you know, it might not go 100% the way I want it to, but there's always this thing in music that I like where it's, sometimes things aren't 100%, you know, they don't gel all the time. And doing that on my own, I had complete creative control over everything.
Sure.
I didn't have people looking in over my shoulder. I could make the album I wanted to.
Brilliant. So what was the urgency for then? How come it had to be done now, like you say? What's that?
Well, I quit my job. I worked in an admin position for about a year and a half, just saving up money, eventually to do music.
Okay.
And I got to a point where I'd saved up the money to leave my job and do the album. Originally, it was going to be a completely different project. I was working on a sort of more folk project. So I worked on that for a little bit. I quit my job, worked on the folk project for a little bit, saw it wasn't really going in the direction I really wanted it to, shelved it, and I nearly went back to work. and had a look through all the like songs I'd written that weren't going to fit into this folk project. And I had 15 songs that I thought, if I don't record these and I don't record them quickly, I'm going to not do this, and I'm going to go back to work, and I'm going to, you know, be in another job. And
okay,
I felt like I needed to do this really quickly. So I'd already given myself a year to do it.
Sure.
But at that point, I was 3 months in and I had nothing to show for it.
Okay. So what's going through your head at that time then? You've not long quit your job, which is a massive step. And
yeah,
like, props to you, mate, as well, because it's not an easy step to take. And that takes a lot of balls. So well done.
Yeah.
But what's going through your head in terms of, you know, 3 months in and you've got nothing to show for it, and you're thinking about maybe going back to work? What's that all like, and how does that tie into the creative project that we're about to hear?
I think the way it ties in is that I've sort of felt a little bit like maybe this isn't for me.
The music project.
Yeah, I felt that maybe doing music on my own might not be a thing I should be doing, or maybe music in general. I've had moments like this before doing music where I've just sort of thought, maybe this isn't for me, and then there's always been something else that's come along and I've gone, okay, that we'll go along with that for a minute, and we'll see where that takes us. And it normally brings me back to doing, you know, writing what I think are good songs anyway, and what a number of other people think are really good songs. And so I'd written all these songs for this folk project. I'd recorded them, they didn't come out the way I wanted it. I'd shelved this album. A couple of jobs had come up that I really seriously looked at, applied for a couple of them. And it was on the day that I got one of the interview requests back, I started to look through an old folder of song lyrics, and I started playing around on the guitar, just playing through all these old songs that I'd had since probably first year of university, when I was 18. And you know, I start playing, I start thinking, oh, that's quite a good song. And then I go on to the next song and be like, that's a really good song. And it would keep going, and I'd keep playing through these songs. And the more I was playing through, I think I got four or five songs in, and I was thinking, okay, let's see how quickly we can do this. Let's see how quickly we can get, you know, the 10 songs together for an album. I had 15, so all I had to do was whittle them down. There were four songs that I really didn't think were that great, so they were really easy to get rid of. There was one that I really loved. It didn't really fit what I was seeing at the time, which was a pretty much straight country record. It didn't have too many sort of hard rock riffs, which is the lead single, has this, you know, really, really strong riff right from the start. I didn't have that song when I decided to start recording. But what I did have was If He Treats You Wrong, which was the second single. And it's a quite country lyric with a really sort of folky or Americana acoustic guitar and drum pattern. And it drives through the song. And it was that point that I sort of started to realise, I've got a record here. If I hadn't have had that song, I might not have done it. I might have gone and had, you know, gone and done a job for another 2 years and saved up even more money and
Sure. Come
back to it in 2 years.
Okay, but so ultimately then you think that music was always going to happen for you.
Yeah.
It was just a time thing when it was right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I came out of uni and took a break from music pretty much straight away, always knowing that it was in the background. I'd set up a timeline at work where it was, okay, I'll do this job for a year, like, and then I'll go and do music. Went past a year, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe I'll stay for 2 years, maybe I'll stay for 3 years. And then a couple of things changed, my mindset changed a little bit. I started doing more gigs, I started becoming a bit more confident in doing gigs, because I think everyone goes through this thing when they leave uni, is they've got no confidence left, because they've just come out of where they've been home for 3 years. Mm. They've been in this little bubble where it's not the real world. You don't see the real world when you're there, and you're suddenly set free. You suddenly got to get a job. You suddenly got to start paying for things. You suddenly got to get a car insurance, and you're set just free into the world. And I struggled with that straight away. I got a job really quickly, and I get quite comfortable in something and I got really comfortable in this job. I didn't want to do anything else. I didn't want to go out and do gigs on an evening because I'd worked all day.
Mm.
As I got more comfortable, I got more confident. I started picking up the guitar again, just playing around at home. And then I started to come back to music. I started to write again. It was 6 months between writing songs before I'd started picking the guitar up again. So I'd had 6 months off. By that point, I was ready to come back and start recording. The first few things I recorded will never see the light of day after I came back because they're just not very good. But there was always this thing in the back of my mind, no matter what I was doing, it was, well, this is all coming back to music. This is all coming back to recording an album, recording, you know, singles. And I think in this day and age, people don't necessarily want to record albums. But I always did. I always found something almost romantic about recording an album, you know, crafting a piece of music that has multiple parts in it, that goes through 10 songs, the last 45 minutes, that someone is going to connect to. That always sort of sang true with me. So everything comes back to maybe taking some time off and then realizing that things, yeah, music is in the background, music is there, and I will come back to it. But I think I was waiting for my moment, and if I hadn't have done that then, I might have missed my moment.
Amazing. Yeah. So it's literally down to the day that you were called up for an interview that it all started to roll in the right direction. And that's, you know, sometimes you could be quite spiritual about that kind of thing and say, well, maybe it's meant to happen. And that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I know that this isn't your only music project that you've done, and I know you from studying at school with you, and I was in your music tech class, and I want to hear in a minute about your, you know, your journey up to this point. But before I go on to that, it's really interesting actually that you're talking about albums the way you do, because actually as a music consumer myself, or an avid music consumer shall I say, albums are my favourite piece of art.
Yeah.
In terms of any type of art, right? I think there's something so important about them, rather than just having a standalone single that maybe sounds great. You've created something much bigger than that, and it's something that flows and takes you on a journey from song one to song 10. And you know, it's not all about those big bangers or the tunes that really stand alone by themselves. It's about the tunes that fill the gaps and take you from A to B. And I really like that. So it's really nice to hear you talking about albums in that way. Going back then, because there was a point in your lifetime where you hadn't picked up a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your main instrument, am I right?
Yeah, guitar and vocals. I'd say that they're probably, I mean, for a long time it was just vocals, but I've obviously worked a lot on guitar.
Sure.
Making an album makes you quite good. You know, when you record a guitar part 45 times, you suddenly start to see yourself improve. You suddenly start to see yourself being able to do riffs that you couldn't do 45 minutes earlier.
Brilliant.
So I would say they're both equal now.
Okay. So putting that in context then, take us through the journey from picking up the guitar for the first time to where we are now, because there's a significant amount of years and time and effort that's taken you through that, and having followed you through a couple of different projects as well, I want you to tell us a little bit about that journey you've gone through.
So first picking up guitar?
Take it right back.
I was 10 when I first saw, it was a video of Queen live in Montreal, and it was seeing Brian May playing guitar. And a couple of other things like Green Day at Milton Keynes. I had that album, and I would literally play it on repeat. So it would be a couple of things. It would be seeing people playing guitar and be thinking, wow, they're really cool. Wish I could be like that. You know, okay. I want to be up on a stage. So I picked up a guitar. It was a nylon acoustic stringed guitar, and I'd never had any experience playing guitar. I picked up a book and it had like the chord charts in it. I sort of learned songs. I wasn't big on learning sort of scales because I never really wanted to be a, even though I, you know, watched Brian May and watched, you know, Green Day playing and watched all those sort of lead guitarists, Eric Clapton, I never really wanted to be the lead guy. I wanted to be the guy singing and playing guitar. So I never really bothered with learning scales. So I just learned songs. And that sort of led me to writing songs. And I think if you've got something in you, I think it is just you're born with that, being able to do it. I think you can learn to do it, but you are born with, you have something to tell. And I think, I mean, I come from a musical family, so maybe it's a bit easier. But I started to write songs, and they were really basic, just, you know, four chords and a few lyrics. And I mean, if I'm completely honest, they sucked. But
so what age are we talking about now in terms of starting to write your own
music? This is music probably still about time? 10, 11.
Wow, okay. So not far into picking up the guitar, then you're starting to jot some stuff down. And
I was having lessons, but I mean, I learned pretty quickly that I didn't want to really be taught to play guitar. I wanted to be taught the chords, but I wanted to learn how to it's like one of those weird things where you want to be taught the first thing and then you want to learn by doing in something else.
Sure.
So I went off and just played songs. This is probably around 11. This is probably starting secondary school. And obviously, you know, but other people won't. Our school had a really good music program. So I had guitar lessons at school, and I'd just learn more and more and more. I'd pick up other bands through guitar lessons. I mean, I started listening to Blink-182 actually through my guitar teacher, and I became a massive Blink-182 fan. I became a massive Sum 41 fan, that sort of pop punk era. Yeah. And it was really, while we were in secondary school, it had ended, like that had all gone. So it was all like ancient history by that point. It was probably 2008 when I was having guitar lessons. And all those sort of bands had been and gone. You know, Blink-182 had given up. Green Day was still around, but not doing as much pop punk stuff. And guitar music was almost fading away. So to want to learn guitar at that point was almost quite individualistic, even though everyone plays guitar. And I mean that, everyone plays guitar. If you ask someone what kind of musical instrument they play, they will have picked up a guitar at some point and played Wonderwall.
I mean, even I have learned how to play guitar at some stage. So I think you're quite right. And that I think makes it even more special that you've got to the stage you are at the moment. Because, like you say, it is so common for someone to pick up and try a guitar and have a few lessons maybe, but not that many people stick at it. To the stage where they start performing and playing in bands and actually producing and writing their album. So again, props to you, because that's a big journey you've gone through, and you've stuck at it clearly for a long time. So you said you were 10 when you first started.
Yeah, so around then. Yeah,
already we're saying 12, 13 years into it.
Yeah, at this stage. It's 13 years, and it was around 15 where I started to learn how to put a song together, and I was just frustrated at how I couldn't do what other people wanted, not what other people wanted, but what other people could do. And I'd be listening to stuff, you know, Ben Howard. That was probably around when I was about 16, 17. The way he writes his songs, it's like a story, but the way that the music and the lyrics intertwine is almost individualistic. There's not many people who can do it. Newton Faulkner can do it like Ben Howard can. But that's really it. The way that the guitar parts follow the melody for so long, or the percussion, you know, that they use just by playing guitar. I was frustrated in myself that I couldn't produce stuff like that, because I loved that music. I loved listening to Ben Howard, the Every Kingdom album. I just love, absolutely love.
I still love listening to that now.
Yeah, it's one of those classic albums that I think is completely underrated. It's probably, I can't tell you the exact year it came out, but it was probably the album of, I listened to that album for solidly 2 years.
Wow.
It was.
So that's been a big influence then.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying then that's when your musical taste started going down a bit more folky, country-ish? Because that's,
yeah,
that's a bit of a jump from Sum 41, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd gone heavier and heavier and heavier. And then I didn't really want to do that anymore. I found it not constricting to write music like that, but I wanted to write songs with stories, and I didn't want to write the same song over and over again, and I found myself writing, being quite derivative of myself. I found myself writing the same thing over and over again, and you do get stuck in these little holes, especially if you haven't listened to other music for so long. I'd literally listened to bands since I was 15. I hadn't listened to like solo artists, and it was all the same sort of bands. It was all bands, really heavy drum beat, really heavy guitar, breakdown in the middle, and then it would end.
Okay.
And there would be no sort of spot for like a really nice melody or a really nice story in those songs. That's not a slight against those artists, because I dug that music when I was back in school.
And from hearing only a little bit about your of your Sour single already, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I can hear that influence in it there.
Yeah,
still.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a really, really strong guitar sort of riff throughout that entire song, and there's moments on the entire album that are like that. But it was Ben Howard that sort of taught me how to write things all together rather than just have this wall of noise. It's okay to have something going on over here, something going on over here, you know, the lyrics to be going and telling you a story, taking you on a journey somewhere. That's okay. It's totally fine to have that. You don't need to be whacked in the face. You don't need to be going deaf.
Yeah.
Just to be enjoying music.
Sure.
I think that was really important. I don't think I'd be the musician I am if I hadn't have discovered sort of Ben Howard, Newton Faulkner, Ryan Adams to a certain extent, although he does Americana. And I think if I hadn't have found that stuff, my music now wouldn't have grown since I was 15.
Okay.
And that's 6 years, six, 7 years ago.
Yeah, that's massive.
Yeah.
So around that time then, am I right in saying you started to play in a couple of bands at school?
Yep.
And you started to experiment not just playing the guitar by yourself, but actually getting out there, practicing with other musicians and performing too, right?
Yeah, the first band I was in, Heroic, I Swear, which obviously you know, I think you came to a couple of gigs.
I did actually, and a couple of our friends are in that too.
Yeah, Will was in that. Will, who obviously produces this podcast, he was in that band. I used to sing in that band, so I didn't really play much guitar at all while I was in that band. I think I played the odd bit of bass every now and then. And I'd found folky stuff almost right at the end of where that band sort of finished. It was like the last couple of months. I'd started to ease off of what I was listening to. Things started to become a lot more chilled out. And I sort of decided I didn't want to do that sort of stuff anymore. And I started to write on my own for the first time for about two, three years. And it was just me and a guitar, and I had this really, really nice song called The River that you can still probably find on SoundCloud. It's right at the bottom of SoundCloud.
Yeah, and I'll put links to your SoundCloud and your Facebook and stuff like that in the show notes of this. So anyone that's interested in finding out a little bit more about Tom and his music, we're hopefully going to hear a bit about couple of songs at the end of this podcast, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for anyone that wants to learn more, I'll direct them to that at the end.
Yeah.
In the show notes, so they can find out a bit more.
Yeah.
But you were saying about starting off, you transitioning again from going through that band phase and then coming back to being a solo artist again.
Yeah, and it was I had this song called The River, and it was pretty much a Ben Howard song. Now I look back on it, it's like a straight rip-off. Like, I don't do that much anymore. I don't rip off songs so blatantly, because you get sued. If you release stuff to be paid for it, you get sued. So I look back at it now, it was a straight rip off, but it was a really, really nice song. It had this really, really nice chorus that when I played it for people, they really, really liked. And they sort of said, oh, that's a really, really different tone for you, because they, for the last 2 years, heard me playing really, really heavy music. Mm. And they started hearing all these sort of songs coming out of me, really inspired by a band called City in Colour.
Okay.
Dallas Green from Earth So Far. Started listening to him a bit more, him and Ben Howard. At that point, it was like, I saw it, it was like seeing the light. It was one of those moments where it opens your eyes to a whole new way of writing songs. And I wrote, at that point, probably 3-4 what I considered really good songs. Started putting them together. It took probably 2 years to get them to a point where I wanted to release an EP, and I did release that EP, and again, it's in the dark corners of the internet. You can find it somewhere, probably on my Bandcamp page, which is long. I haven't used it since I released that EP.
Okay.
So that's a long time ago. And I just called it the River EP. It had 4 songs on it. Another one of the songs from that was Home to You, and this is going into uni now. I wrote that song for an assignment and put it on the EP. Just because it had this really, really nice sort of journey through it. It was one of the first songs that I had that had this really sort of nice story arc to it. And it started off, you know, really quiet, and it would build and build and build and build, which is what I'd always been looking for. I'd always been looking for songs that do that. I like upward curves in songwriting. There are songs that I write that have just...
like crescendos.
Yeah, it's like an upwards curve all the way to that end bit.
Why is that then? What is so good about that sound or that structure to a song?
It opens up the opportunity to write a story. So you can start a story really, really quietly and then keep going, keep building up, make the songwriting more powerful. You can write, you know, not more aggressively, but you can take a more aggressive approach with the words you use. And the way that you can set the words when you have a song that goes up rather than stays at a certain level.
Sure.
You can use certain words for effect, which then raises the tone even more and even more and even more. So you always look for that sort of upwards curve when you're writing a song. I mean, there are songs that I write that just stay on the same level. But I would say the ones that are the more successful are the ones that have that curve, because I think people... even though people do put music on just in the background, I think people do actually like to, you know, listen and hear lyrics, and that's why lyrics are printed on the inside of CD covers, not on mine, but that's why people like lyrics so much.
Yeah, definitely. So let's take things then back to the present moment, and I know that actually just a couple of days ago you were performing in the Corn Exchange,
yeah,
and, you know, putting out a couple of your new songs and. Playing alongside some other local artists that are up and coming.
Yeah.
So what kind of things are you doing at the moment that's leading up to the release of your album? Is it all live and performing, or is there a lot of background work and admin considering the album's already there? What are we doing at the moment?
As soon as the album was finished, it all suddenly started to become more admin based, and suddenly you've got to secure distribution for the album, you've got to find gigs to play at. I'm quite lucky in the fact I know a couple of people that put on gigs quite regularly, so they'll have me as their opener, and it becomes, you know, you build up and build up and build up, and the more you play, the more people that will see you, and it's actually just free advertising at that point.
Okay.
Even though you might not get paid at some of these gigs, it is basically free advertising. I hate the idea that it's, you know, you get exposure. I hate that, but it is true. That is what you get. So you might not be getting paid, but you are getting to play in front of 50 people that you might not have ever got to play to.
Okay. And they might never have heard of your music.
Exactly.
Or you.
Exactly. And okay. I always try and make sure that, you know, everyone knows who I am. You know, I say my name a number of times while I'm playing. I say what the songs are. I make myself have quite a big stage presence, which is something I'd always struggled with in the past, but I've really sort of nailed down this whole thing of I'm on stage and I'm playing now. This is something you want to pay attention to.
Mm.
But other than when I'm playing live, it's mostly just an admin position.
So playing live is something that I could never imagine doing myself, and that's probably one of the reasons why I've taken this stance where no one can see my face.
Mm-hmm.
I can record it and put it out at a later date. It's not live. So I'm in awe of anyone that can stand up on a stage and do that. What kind of things run through your head, or what's it like performing to an audience?
Pure fear. No, I'm kidding. It changes per gig. If I've played at the place before, I'm fine. If I've played with the band before, so if I've played with the backing band, like not the backing band, but the people I'm supporting, I'm fine. But it's that unknown that is the thing that you get that little butterflies 4 hours before you play, and it amps up and amps up and amps up and amps up. And then you get on stage and it's this big release of energy that you've been stored up all day. You sort of get yourself really, really pent up about it. And then you just release it all. And that can either come off as two things. It can either come off as severe arrogance or supreme confidence. I try not to have the severe arrogance, but sometimes confidence comes off as that. It's quite difficult. When, like, smaller venues, it's quite difficult to portray a really, really confident thing because everyone's really close. You know, people are literally, like, straight in front of your face. But the bigger venues, like the Corn Exchange, where they've got a proper stage, people are quite far away, you can be a bit more, sort of, you can have a bit more bravado, which is something I hate. I hate using words like that. But it's true, you have to have stuff like that because people only see you for half an hour, especially when you're a new artist. So you've got to make
a lasting impact.
Right? You have to make your half an hour better than everyone else's half an hour. So much so that when they get to the end of the night, they're going, oh, the guy who played second, Tom Allison, that was a really good set. They might not have talked about the other bands, but they'll remember that set because I've put 110% into it. And, you know, I've come off stage leaving a lasting impression, or at least I hope I have.
Okay. Because, I mean, even though, like you say, it's a fine line between confidence and arrogance, as a music fan who goes to concerts, I can imagine it's probably still better for you to come off even arrogant than it is for you to be really timid and shy and reserved.
Yeah. There's a fine line between all three of those things: arrogance, confidence, and being not enough.
Okay.
If you've come off after half an hour and you don't think you've done well enough, you haven't been confident enough, you've not put yourself out there enough. If you have come off stage and you've not talked to the audience once, you haven't done your job in putting yourself out there. I find it really important to talk to the audience. Not so much at, you know, smaller gigs. But, I mean, sometimes at smaller gigs are those sort of lightning-in-a-bottle moments when you have really good banter with a member of the audience. I've had a couple of moments like that where everyone laughs because, you know, it's this, like, communal moment where everyone's laughing just because of what someone's said in the audience and how the artist has played off of what that person has said. And I enjoy those moments. I never used to enjoy those moments. Those moments used to scare the living bejeebus out of me. But I've actually sort of grown into liking that, you know, a little bit of confrontation. Not lots, you know, you don't want someone like cussing you out.
No.
But having a little bit of confrontation with someone, you know, joking, having that banter, that back and forth, really helps break up a set and makes you seem more memorable because someone's gone, oh, that guy had a really good joke with that guy in the audience. And people remember that.
Sure.
And then they'll go, oh, that song he played after that was really good.
Okay. So it's all about that association and building that connection in that really short space of
Absolutely.
Time. So with that in mind then, because obviously you've highlighted a couple of things that you really enjoy and you've grown to and like doing in terms of performing, and you've talked a bit about your producing and writing, what are some of the challenges that you face as a musician. Maybe it's to do with the creative process, or maybe it's to do with the stage you're at the moment. Talk us through what your challenges are about.
Main challenges in the recording process is you are your own boss. So if you're doing everything on your own, you've got no one telling you to do more or telling you to do less. There were times when I'd work all day. And I mean literally all day. It would be from the moment I get up to the moment I go to bed. On doing one thing. And if I'd had someone else there, they might have gone, let's move on and do something else and give your brain a rest. So that's probably the main thing about when you're working on your own, and self-management and being quite strict with yourself. And I've got better at doing that. And apart from that, the other like main worries are, is the album going to sell? Is the single going to sell? Where's the next sort of payday coming from so I can continue doing this? Am I going to go down really well at this gig, or am I going to absolutely flop? Because no one wants to walk off stage to the sound of their own footsteps. That is the worst thing, and that's happened once or twice, where I'm, you know, my style of music is not that big in this country. It's getting bigger, but as if you go into doing country music and you're from the UK, you know that it's going to be a little bit of a tough time, at least to start with. And as I say, everything's always building. But there's always this sort of mild fear of what the next thing is. And sometimes even the good things can scare the living crap out of you, because you're not sure whether you can deal with that yet. And I mean, recording an album, I wasn't 100% sure I could deal with that at that point of time. I now realise that I can. I'm now written album number two. I'm ready to start recording album number two.
Wow, already. Okay.
So that's a, you know, another whole step that I've taken.
So the songs are already down.
Yeah, I've got 20 songs.
Wow.
To whittle down to probably 12.
Goodness.
For album two.
Okay.
Because I'd finished recording album one, and I suddenly had all this creative energy that I couldn't use.
Sure, because you're focusing on the admin stuff.
Yeah, you're focusing on paperwork. You're focusing on, you know, getting all the artwork right, which is a sort of creative release, but not in the same way that writing a song is. So I had the B-sides from this album that are good songs. They needed a bit of work. I didn't have time to do the work to them before. So I sort of took them, did some work on them. Out of those songs, I had new songs. I had some songs from the folk project that I'd really, really wanted to use. So the next album might be a little bit more of an eclectic bunch of music. There's probably going to be a lot more acoustic guitar on the next album.
Okay.
But I wanted that time to work on the songs, because I may not have had that time on this album to work on songs, and if something wasn't right with a song, I probably scrapped it or put it on a shelf and left it there, because I was really conscious that I don't have time to work on that right now. I need to get these songs ready to go. Once they're released, I can work on those.
Okay. And I've just seen today, actually, the trailer for your Sour music video, which we touched on earlier, and it's genuinely really, really good what I've seen so far. And in terms of building a trailer to a video as well, I think it leaves more than enough to desire and want to check out. So
it's great.
I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. But what goes into making a music video? Because it's not something that we get as an audience, we get to find out about.
It all happened really quick. Within the space of 2 weeks, it had all been sorted out. We were on set shooting it.
Okay, so you messaged the
I didn't. Jordan, the director, he messaged me just out of the blue, and said, by any chance, are you looking for a music video? Because he'd seen that I was advertising the album. And I'd literally said to my parents before they left for work that day, I said, I really need to start thinking about a music video. And then Jordan messaged me and said, are you looking for a music video? I was like, as it happens, I am. And he was like, I've got some ideas, send me over the song, let me take a look, and we'll see what we can put together. At that point, I mean, this isn't, you know, a slight on Jordan. I wasn't really expecting expecting much. I knew that he worked in the industry, and he works in the video industry, in the movie industry. But I'd made him fully aware. I had no budget for this. So anyone that was doing the work kind of had to do it just for expenses. I was happy to pay expenses, but that was it.
Wow. And he was still keen then?
And he said, that's absolutely fine. And I made an agreement with him that on a future video, you know, I'll pay him more. And he was like, yeah, that's cool. Let's make a video. Let's make something cool. So he sorted out a treatment really quickly for the video. It looked great.
What does the treatment mean? Sorry.
So the treatment is like a storyboard for the video, what the video is going to be, like the storyline of it.
Okay.
It's called a treatment in America. I don't know why. In country like circles and all other music video circles, it's called a treatment. So he came up with that really quick. We had a meeting, discussed everything. Actresses already in place. Justin, the cameraman, was already in place, ready to go. Everything was ready. 2 weeks later, we were shooting the video. And I was terrified. It all happened really quick. I wasn't sure whether I was ready to do something on that scale yet. I'm saying on that scale. It was bigger than anything I'd ever done.
Okay.
Creative-wise.
Yeah.
I'm working with six other people. And it's something I've never done. I've never acted to camera.
And it's all focused on you and your music, right?
Yeah.
It's not... You're not playing a part in this. It's all yours, right?
It's got a storyline. But as... Music videos have storylines, but they're kind of not vague. But I mean, our storyline in our video is really strong. I'm really proud of what Jordan put together with that. It's a really, really strong foundation for a video. But sometimes they can be really, really wishy-washy, and sometimes what's happening on screen doesn't necessarily relate to the music.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure whether I was ready to have something completely focused on me, where I had to see myself back. Like, on stage, I don't have to see myself. Like, I just play.
Mm-hmm.
I play, I try and do a really good job and try and make people's nights. That's what I try and do. But I don't have to then sit and watch the monitor and go, oh, that could have been better. I could have done that facial expression, not that one. And on the whole, those guys are really, really good at sort of teach me where I'm supposed to be going,
okay.
What I'm supposed to be looking at. I mean, there was one moment where the camera had to pan across my eye line and I had to just keep fixed on one spot, and I couldn't do it because I'm, you know, inexperienced. I was watching the camera all the time.
Sure.
So the camera would pan across shot and it would just be like this action man eyes all the way across. And I was like, I need like a focal point. And they were just like, oh, that's cool. So one of us would just stand with a piece of paper on our finger and you can fix onto that, and then we'll just scan across. And I was like, as soon as they did that, it was fine, it worked.
Wow.
And they put me at ease straight away. The actress that we had was great, Beth Duncan. She was great. Put me at ease straight away. And some of those shots, you know, we had to be quite close to each other. And originally we weren't going to do those close shots at the start of the day. We were going to sort of do some of the outdoor shots first.
Mm.
And then it rained, so we couldn't do the outdoor shots. So we had to go straight into doing the shots that were filmed on a bed. And I have to look deadpan down the camera while Beth is crawling all over me. And that was quite a nervous thing. I'm not that confident of a guy. And suddenly you've got someone you don't know who has worked with other actors before, you know, very, very in your close proximity.
With a camera in your face.
With a camera in my face. Yeah. And also... sped up because we were doing a cool thing where we were sliding the video down but sped up the music so it also looks the same speed.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it totally blew my mind. So
I'm not sure I follow, but I think it'll all become apparent in the music video.
You'll see what I mean. It's like it's in slow-mo, but it's not because I'm singing the actual speed of the lyrics, but because we filmed it sped up, it looks the same speed when it's slowed down again.
Okay, sure.
It's really cool. It looks great.
Okay.
I promise, it looks really good.
Like I said, I'm genuinely really looking forward to watching the video and seeing seeing the creative artwork that's gone into it all.
Yeah, but these were all new things, and I was just, Jordan won't mind me saying, I was absolutely bricking it, because I turned up, we did 2 days, the first day was just me on my own playing guitar, and that was like playing a gig, so I didn't really have to worry about it. But it was the Sunday, it was an early start, early call time, and it was suddenly an awful lot of people. I mean, four of them I'd met before, but the actress, who I'd never met before, the special effects guy who was doing smoke and all sorts of stuff on the video. And it was, I was bricking it the entire, for like the first 3 hours of the day, I was really not very confident with it. And then you just, it's like playing guitar, you grow into it, you grow into performing, and it is just performing.
Yeah.
But you have to be quite self-aware, which I'm not. I'm not very self-aware a lot of the time. But you just have to be self-aware that you're sharing screen time. Even though you are like the focal point, because it's your music, you are sharing the screen with someone. Mm. So it was a big adjustment.
Okay. Well, I think on that performing note, it's probably about time we heard some of your music. If you're still up for playing some tunes.
Absolutely. Okay, so this one is called Sour. This is the first single from my album, Chapter One. You could have left in just a minute, but you talk of love without me now. Could it be you played me from beginning to end? Everything we said left in the cold. All the things we shared you went and sold. I'm picking up the pieces from the road that fell down when your true colors were showed. Now I think I'ma take a step back, cause you got me caught in your trap, and you could set all of this on fire. I thought we were over and done with, but your voice just keeps coming back to me. But this love turns sour, sour. Destined to explode. Maybe I was always not to know. Who else was there when you were answering your phone? Could it be your heart was never in it? Maybe yours was always made for sinning. I can't think of any better reason why all of this seemed to blow up in a minute. I think I'ma take a step back, cause you got me caught in your trap, and you could set all of this on fire. I thought we were over and done with, but your voice just keeps coming back to me. This love turns sour, sour. This love, this love turns sour. This love I think I would take a step back, cause you got me caught in the trap, and you could set all of this on fire. I thought we were over and done with, but your voice just this love turns sour. I think I'ma take a step back, cause you got me caught in your trap, and you could set all of this on fire. Oh, I thought we were over and done with, but your voice just keeps coming back to me. This love turns sour. Sour.
Awesome. That sounds so good. Really, really genuinely impressed with that.
Thank you.
It's whilst it's really catchy and it's got a driving, like, powerful riff going through the whole thing, it's still really interesting and it's got a lot of dynamics, like you were talking about earlier in the podcast.
Yeah,
it's got a lot of that story to it, like you're saying, where it isn't just on one level.
Yeah,
I think it's cool.
With that one in particular, there's like rise and fall, rather than that constant rise, it's just rise and fall, but it does build right at the end. That's actually one of the first ones where I've done that rise and fall thing. There's another one on the album called Prisoner that does that, but yeah, the rise and fall, especially in country music, is quite important. They like big choruses, but they like you to get to the chorus quite quick, so you have to have quite a quick rise and fall.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to hear another one?
Brilliant, yeah. Do you want to introduce this again?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the second single. This one's called If He Treats You Wrong. It's available, Leica, Sour is on iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube streaming service as well. So it's called If He Treats You Wrong. Please let me see what it's like if we didn't even meet. Hold on to what I said or what you've done. All the words seem to linger on your lips, they all feel as bitter as the kiss you gave me on the now we said we'd take it slow, slow, slow. Know that you had another guy, it hurts more for him, your heart ain't shy, everyone knew, so why was I surprised? So what was I to you? Just a boy to get you through, just someone you latched onto while the truth was overdue. Did you ever say he was better anyway? If he treats you wrong, you'll deserve it all along. So did you really think no one knew what was happening? Did you care or blindly go along with your messed up show? I'm pretty tired of the sleepless nights I've spent thinking about all the lies that you have said. Every hour seems to pass so goddamn slow, slow, slow. When I drink, none of the problems disappear. A shadow whiskey can wipe you from the thoughts of how you played me all along. So what just a boy to get you through, just someone you latched onto while the truth was overdue. Did you ever say he was better anyway? If he treats you wrong, you'll deserve it all along. You'll deserve it all along. They all feel as bitter as the kiss you gave me on the now we said we'd take it slow, slow, slow. But when I drink, none of the problems disappear. A shot of whiskey can wipe you from the thoughts of how you played me all along. So what was I to you? Just a boy to get you through, just someone you latched onto
why the truth was overdue. Did you ever say he was better anyway? If he treats you wrong, you deserve it all.
That was incredible. I feel so privileged to be sat here having an audience and one all to myself, you know, just listening to your music for the first time, actually. So thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be able to do it and be able to come down. You know, I love what you guys do with your podcast. So
you should be really proud of what you're putting out there at the moment. I can see you've come a long way since I was listening to your music back in sixth form and seeing you perform, and I thought you were good then, but what you've just played for us there is another level. So well
thank
done
you,
mate. Man.
Thank you very much.
I look forward to listening to the full album when it comes out. And for anyone listening, I'd encourage you to go check out Tom in some of the links that are in the show notes. And actually, if you're interested in owning a signed copy of the album, then I'd encourage you to head over to the Stephen Reed podcast Facebook or Instagram, and there's a competition we're running where you can potentially win a copy for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll write some lyrics on the inside as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming down.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure, and we'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Take care, listeners. Until the next time.